I'd like to call November 7th, 2023, regular session, Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. Ms. Hakona, Matt, please have a roll call.
Commissioner Clark?
Present.
Commissioner Nichols?
Present.
Commissioner Outlaw Ryan?
Present.
Commissioner Posey?
Present.
Commissioner Zielinski?
Present.
Vice Chair Sturman?
Present.
And Chair Harrington?
Present. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you again for joining us this evening. A few housekeeping items. The restrooms are outside the drinking fountains to the right. There are no public hearing meetings tonight for the agenda. But if you wish to speak during call to audience, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room. And please give that to our recording secretary, Ms. Hakona, to my left. Open the call order. At this time, any members of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issues not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meetings Laws, individual commissioners members may ask town staff to review the matter. Ask that the matter be placed on future agenda or respond to criticisms made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action or matters raised during called audience. In order to speak during called audience, please specify what you wish to speak about or discuss and complete in a blue card. Ms. Hakona, is there any additional blue cards? All right. Thank you. I'll go ahead and close call to audience. Ms. Hakona, may I please have a read agenda item number one?
Review and approval of the October 3rd, 2023 regular session meeting minutes and October 23rd, 2023 special session meeting minutes.
Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the October 3rd, 2023, October 23rd, 2023 draft meeting minutes.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any noes or abstentions? All right. Thank you. Motion carries 7-0. Agenda item number two, Ms. Hakona. Would you please read agenda item number two for us?
Presentation about the community's next 10-year action plan known as Oro Valley's Path Forward.
We have Ms. Sims. You have the floor.
Thank you, and good evening, Chair and Commissioners. I'm here tonight to present the community's next 10-year plan, OV's Path Forward. Before I get into some specifics about ways that people can participate and the process for the plan, I want to share a very short video with folks. See if this works.
Oro Valley is a unique community that cares about quality of life and the things that make this place we call home so special. When people come together to have conversations, collaborate, share ideas, and listen to one another, we better understand how to move our town forward. One of the community's most important efforts is the creation of a 10-year plan that outlines what our residents value and provides guidance on the town's actions. That's where you come in. It's time to plan together and chart Oro Valley's path forward, and your participation is essential. Why participate? Establishing OV's path forward starts with you, and the plan will come from the many voices throughout our community. It will reflect your values, goals, and priorities for Oro Valley. The 10-year plan holds the town accountable to achieving meaningful results, and we are on our way to fulfilling 100% of the community's priorities from the last general plan, such as park and community center improvements, protection of large saguaros, excellent public safety, and increased transparency of town services. So let's kickstart the conversation to plan OV's path forward. Join us online or out in the community at your favorite restaurants, events, or shops. We want to hear from you. Tell us, what do you like most about Oro Valley? What are Oro Valley's greatest challenges over the next 10 years? What do you think Oro Valley should be known for? Let your voice be heard and learn more at ovpathforward.com. The path to Oro Valley's future starts here.
So preparations for this kickoff, which officially happened at the end of October, it was announced with the mayor's speech at State of the Town. But preparations started back in January with a townwide survey and a resident advisory group who created an award-winning community engagement plan. The community engagement plan is what really lays out the tools and methods that we will be using to reach and encourage all ages and backgrounds of community members to participate in this process. It also includes guiding principles or the must-dos for community engagement, especially to make sure that the process is inclusive and accessible. Community ownership and engagement of this process and the plan is critical to not only be successful in this effort, but also create a plan that will stay relevant over 10 years, as that's how long we will have the plan to implement the community's vision, goals, and policies. Since we worked on the community engagement plan back in March, we have done some more preparations to prepare to make sure the process is inclusive and accessible, one of which is getting background reports created. And so this provides a baseline of information for topics that are important to the community, one of which is housing, which you're going to discuss a little bit later this evening. As part of the effort to get the community involved, we'll be posting these reports on various topics throughout the next 4 months, but also, and more importantly, discussion questions to really understand what the community values with regard to public safety, the environment, housing, economic development, and much more. The most recent effort to prepare for the launch was the Project Identity and Branding, and I want to thank those of you who attended the resident advisory group meetings for that effort. What came out of that was the OV Path Forward branding, which was used, and you will see tonight, to go to events and to encourage people to participate, but more importantly, to make sure that it invokes accountability, collaboration, community, as well as the environment. As you saw in the video, we did launch an interactive website and are also doing a lot of in-person events. We want to make sure that participating is easy and fun for everyone and that they understand that their participation does yield meaningful results. And then lastly, staff's role in this is really coordinating people and information. So we are looking for volunteers to help not only spread the word if you are a part of an organization or a group in Oro Valley, but also help gathering feedback from neighbors or any groups that you're a part of. This launch does mark the start of a 3-year process for community participation. And community outreach, again, is the top priority for this first phase, and the results of which will be the foundation for the plan, but also help update the community's vision and values that will guide the goals and policies in the second phase. And as part of this first phase, we will be doing many updates to the commission about what we are hearing from the community. So especially once we start getting feedback about those focus topics like housing, we will be coming back to the commission to let you know what we're hearing. Also, there will be a townwide survey that will be launched early next year, and we'll be reporting those findings to you all as well. And then, of course, once we draft the community vision and guiding principles based off all the feedback we've received, we'll be presenting that to the commission as well. So I can't emphasize enough that everyone's voice is needed in this process. That's the only way to make sure that this plan is truly reflective of the community. And we are starting to get participation now. We're encouraging it now, especially to answer the 3 questions that were in the video. And also, I would like to invite the commissioners to participate in a little exercise now. So those three questions, this is what we've been doing out in the community. So we have been on our booth at different events like Halloween Spectacular. We were on the Loop on Sunday. Asking these three questions to the community, because really what we'll do with these is once we get all the feedback and results, this will form the community's vision and values. So as community members, I would like to ask you if you'd come join me at the table and fill out a sticky note to answer one of the questions. We would appreciate it. I also know there are some community members in the audience, and I can't not have an opportunity to get as much participation as possible. So if you would like to participate as well, either now or at the end of the meeting, we want to hear everyone's feedback. So with that, if you would want to come over here.
Come on, Paul. Get up here, please. You already did it.
Oh.
I've already done it online, so yeah.
Oh, wow. Overachievers.
I'll be happy to stack my votes.
I'm sure.
Am I ready?
Yes. Right here. Well, apparently they're all overachievers. I've already done it, so.
Oh, okay. I did it too once, but I can do it again.
Yeah. Well, and they're very broad questions, so you may have multiple answers.
So they've got a permanent
choice. Choice.
On the board. It's up to you. Well, I can do it. I can hear you. Oh.
As far as the storage of the books, that's all supposed to be all the rest of the parking and stuff like that.
All right, thank you all. For those of you who are part of the resident advisory group, you know how much planners love sticky notes. So now we're going to spread that to the community. So we will take all of your feedback, and again, it will be paired with what we're hearing out in the community, and we will be posting these routinely, monthly, some of the themes we're hearing so that the community can stay abreast of what we're hearing as well. I do want to let folks know that these same questions and more can be answered at ovpathforward.com. The site is an interactive website. You can register for free and join the community conversation. And part of this is launching those more focused discussions. So this month, we will be launching the discussion about housing, as well as another one about economic development. So even if you have already been to the website and answered those three questions, make sure you're checking it often, because we will continue to be rolling out more opportunities to stay engaged. And there will be ongoing participation even out in the community. If you enjoy doing your sticky note, we are looking for volunteers to do just that, to be at booths out in the community, and not just at events. We're going to local businesses. We want to be at parks and trailheads, churches, schools, wherever we can get to make sure we're reaching all demographics, but also all geographical areas of Oro Valley. So folks that are interested in getting more involved can also go online and fill out a form, and we will be having our first kind of volunteer training in December to make sure the volunteers are fully supported when they're out in the community. And this concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. My neighborhood is particularly quiet out front, and no real good place to set up a booth that I'd get much traffic. But I walk my dogs. I'm sometimes out there. Are you going to provide any handouts where if I meet people, I could hand them something and have a discussion with them? Because I found in my neighborhood, most people haven't gotten engaged, and we need to do that. So if you've thought of that or have something we could use as a handout, a quick introduction, that would be great.
So Chair Harrington, Commissioner Zielinski, great idea. And we do have some little postcards that we are handing out now that I'm happy to give you to hand out. We also have stickers that are great for water bottles, we learned this weekend. So those we can also get you some as well. And for the community engagement plan, one thing we did plan for is eventually doing a postcard to every household. I think we're going to wait until the survey's live to send that out, but that's also an opportunity to get the folks who maybe are out and about.
All right. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. Just a quick question. I appreciate that we're out there in the community doing these things. Is one of the questions asking if they are Oro Valley residents?
Sure. So Chair Harrington, Commissioner Clark, so on the website, we do ask if people are residents, but all community members are welcome to participate. So sometimes in the community, there have been residents, but there also have been just community members who work here or recreate here, and we've been wanting them to be participating as well, as users of Oro Valley, if you will.
Thank you.
Commissioner Nichols, you may go.
Yes, Chair Harrington. Ms. Sims, so if I understood the graphic right, we're leading up to a 2026 election in November, or a ratification in November, right? And we'll start drafting the document next year, is that correct?
Yeah, so Chair Harrington, Commissioner Nichols, this year is really focused on getting that community input so that next year we can start drafting the actual goals and policies based off all the feedback we get this year. And then that will lead up to having a more complete plan to get back out into the community, make sure we got it right, and then go to the be on the ballot in 2026.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Sherman.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. I'm kind of prone to HOAs, so it's a situation is that you mentioned HOAs. So do you have a schedule yet to make some presentations? Because I can share with you an opportunity that if you would like to present it.
Sure. So Chair Harrington, Vice Chair Sturman, we are reaching out to HOAs to get on their meeting list. In fact, we will be presenting to the Vistoso Community Association and all their subs on next Monday. And so we will continue to reach out to some the associations in town. We have some people who have already registered online who are inviting us to their associations as well to get the word out.
Thank you.
Is there any other commissioners?
I have one additional. Are we reaching out to the apartment housing that we have in Oro Valley? Because I know that sometimes a lot of them get left out other than the residents, the homeowners. So are we reaching out to the all the apartments in the community?
Chair Harrington, excellent idea. Definitely to be even in the lobbies or if they have barbecues or something going on for their residents. But kind of with Commissioner Zielinski's making sure they at least get flyers and some of the swag to promote it to their residents when they come and pay rent.
All right. Is there any other questions? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and go to Ms. Ancona. Would you please give us agenda item number 3?
Discussion only regarding the Town of Oro Valley's housing study, including a data assessment and survey analysis.
Good evening. My name is Danny Court. I'm an economist and a partner at Elliott D. Pollock & Company. We were hired by Town of Oro Valley to conduct a housing conditions and gap assessment. As part of that, again, the purpose of the scope here was to fulfill the action item of the town's current general plan and the previous strategic plan, prepare for this next 10-year plan that's being outlined this evening, which includes a housing element, which is required by state law. And we are just going to give you some highlights. We've chosen our favorite 20 slides to share with you from both the surveys and the housing assessment. If you do want some nighttime reading, there's 100-plus pages of reports in both several surveys and our housing assessment that's available to you, and we encourage you to dive into that. Just real quickly on our team, again, our firm is Elliott D. Pollock & Company. We are based in Scottsdale, Arizona. We've been around for over 35 years. We are very Arizona-centric. We've done work in every county in the state and nearly every community within the state of Arizona. 90% of our work is done here in the state of Arizona. Our specialties revolves anywhere where economics and real estate meet. So housing studies is one of our specialties that we've had the privilege of doing these analyses in several communities, most recently up in northern Arizona, Flagstaff, Williams, Camp Verde, Sedona, and Winslow, in Lake Havasu City, for the city of Sedona specifically, in doing a deeper dive and a strategy with them. Also the combined communities of the Verde Valley, including Cottonwood, Clarkdale, Jerome, and as well as the city of Mesa. We have partnered with West Group Research for the survey portion of the scope. West Group Research is the longest standing market research firm in the state of Arizona, in business for over 60 years, and have done work with nearly every government entity or community that you can think of. There's a bullet list here of some of their recent work for municipalities such as Eloy and Queen Creek and City of Phoenix and Tempe, some quasi-governmental agencies such as Maricopa Association of Governments, state departments like the Arizona Office of Tourism, and enterprises such as Valley Metro. I am going to turn some time over to Kathy DeBoer of West Group Research, because our housing analysis utilized the surveys of the town residents, business owners, and employees in our work. So I wanted to have her outline some of the methodology and the results of the surveys that were conducted within the town of Oro Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. We are delighted to share with you the work that we have been doing over the last number of months. And first, I'm just going to summarize. We did three surveys. The first and kind of the cornerstone of the research was our telephone survey, and this was specifically targeting residents. We used our team of telephone interviewers to make outbound phone calls. The data was collected from households that were selected via a random sample of both listed cell phone or landline phone numbers within the Oro Valley zip code areas. Everyone interviewed were screened to make sure that they were that they did live in the five zip codes that you see listed there. Our goal was 400 surveys. We completed 401. The average interview length was a little over 15 minutes. We did weight the data to accurately represent the population. We very carefully, as we drew the sample and as we fulfilled the surveys, and made sure that we were working hard to make sure we were getting representation from all populations and subpopulations. But in this world, without spending loads and loads and loads of money, it's hard to get all of the numbers to match exactly. So we worked with the numbers that we received from your staff in terms of the percent of males and females and distribute by age, got as close as we could to the numbers, and then we just slightly weighted the data, again, just so that there isn't a skew toward younger or older or a different population, just to make sure that from our perspective that we were representative of the Oro Valley population. So that total weighted sample size has a margin of error plus or minus 4.9%. That's at the 95% level of confidence. Then there are two supplemental surveys. The resident online survey was conducted by your staff and posted in a wide variety of locations that are all listed in the report. The web data is considered supplemental to the phone results. Again, though participants opt into both surveys, there is a self-selection bias that goes with the web survey. There weren't any controls to make sure that we were getting representation necessarily from every zip code, that there wasn't every member in the household was participating. Some of the controls that we put on the telephone to make sure that we adequately represent the population, but there is extreme value in opening up a survey like that to all the residents so that everyone has their opportunity if they want to, just not those that happen to be contacted by the phone survey. But what it usually means is that those who took the time to respond to the web survey are more likely to be highly engaged community members. Then the supplemental part of that as well, the SetNest survey, was with business and workforce, and that too was an online survey. We had 136 completed surveys there. Again, all respondents were screened to ensure they were either a business owner or an employee of a company in Oro Valley, but only non-resident employees were invited to complete this survey because we wanted residents who were employed in the area to be responding to the residents' survey. And so we had 136 completed there with 51 business owners, 85 non-resident employees, and again, supplemental because of the nature of the data collection, but very valuable nonetheless. Again, because they do provide good insights, but they may not necessarily be representative of the population of Oro Valley business owners or non-residents because, again, no controls were put in place to make sure that there was representation across the different groups. But the information is available for consumption. So I'm just going to go through a few highlights. If you've dug through the reports, as Danny said, there's a lot of pages, and we asked a lot more questions than I'll be showing with you today. These are the ones that dovetail with the information that Pollock Associates collected, and so we thought it'd be best just to stick to that information. So one of the questions we asked is how concerning is the cost of housing? And you can see here we have lines for both the phone survey and the online survey. And you can see that about half of the population in both surveys felt that the housing is cost of housing in the Oro Valley is of at least very or somewhat concerning. We also asked what were some barriers to home ownership for folks. What did they feel were either personally or what they are seeing and hearing? And the number one barrier to home ownership is the average home price. And you can see that mentioned by 54% of those who completed the phone survey. Next down was the highest were high interest rates that folks encounter when they're trying to secure a home loan, trying to save for a down payment, ranked third, and then a lack of housing supply, ranked fourth. And you can see that while there was variance in terms of the overall percentages, that both in the online and the phone survey, those were the top four items. This one reflects the perceptions of business owners and employees. Half of those business owners and workers who commute from outside the town feel that the housing costs or rent is too high in Oro Valley. And another 20-25% say rent is affordable, but that home ownership is out of reach. So you can see those percentages there. And then we also ask about their level of agreement with some statements regarding housing challenges, so we could get a sense of the level of agreement and certainty about their public perceptions on these specific items. And you can see here at the top here among the phone, again, is the darker line. Residents are most concerned about providing affordable housing for essential workers, service workers, first responders. And then you can see as it goes down, there's a lack of financial availability housing for seniors, veterans, persons with disabilities, and then also working down into the bottom three there were still multi-general housing or children who grow up here cannot afford to live in Oro Valley as adults, about a third agree with that, and then adequate sized housing option for those who are interested in downsizing. But you can see the top, both on phone and online, were the concern about the lack of financially attainable housing for those key subgroups. But then we also asked them what were the biggest needs for housing in Oro Valley. And so we can see that single-family homes was perceived to be the biggest need, with 38% saying it was a high need and another 25% listing it as a 4 on the 1-5 scale. Then they looked at townhomes or duplexes, secondary residential units on existing lots, and condominiums. So those round out the top 4. You can see that they did not feel that there was a need for manufactured homes or mobile homes with a much less lower need. And then we also said, well, if we're looking at rental options, what is the preferred type of options that they felt was either very acceptable or acceptable from their opinion for Oro Valley? And you can see their residents were most likely to say that they would prefer to see detached 1 or 2 story rental homes, followed by 1 or 2 story duplexes or townhomes. But the higher the density, the less likely the residents were to rate those as an acceptable options for the town. And if you have any questions for me, I'm happy, but you might want to listen to him, Danny, first, and then we can just take all of our questions at the end.
Thank you, Kathy. The survey data, in addition to a lot of the sources you see listed here, I won't read them all off, but we go through a comprehensive list of available data that's either government data or a private vendor that's very reliable in terms of new home sales or apartments. We consulted with the Pima County Assessor's Office for sales prices by type of product, and all of those are outlined here. So the next few slides are going to give you kind of a snapshot of either housing stock or demographics, such as household income and things like that. We use that data to then look at trends in housing cost, in what kind of worker wages there are in the region, and what is affordable to both workers and residents in the region. This is a quick snapshot of just the housing stock that's currently in Oro Valley as of the 2021 American Community Survey from the U.S. Census. You see there a very high percentage of single-family detached homes, especially when you compare that to Pima County as a region or the state of Arizona as a whole. When you have a high percentage of single-family detached units, that means you're going to have a lower percentage of the attached product, and you see that borne out here, very stark difference in when you look at mobile or manufactured homes. There's a very, very small supply of manufactured homes in the town of Oro Valley when you compare it to the region and state. That just a quick plug here, that's one indication when you see this type of housing stock, and again, it's not it's not way out of the ordinary for a suburban community like Oro Valley to have a higher percentage of detached homes. But when you're looking for, when you're looking at it in terms of affordability, it does tend, when you don't have that attached product, it tends to restrict the ability of low or moderate income households from finding affordable housing in the community. Occupancy rates, very similar to the state and the county. This is another thing that we look at, you know, is there a large inventory of potentially seasonal or second homes? Of the vacant housing in Oro Valley, there is a high percentage that are seasonal or recreational, meaning that is a, you know, you'll have a boost of population in the winter months, and also that means that is a housing unit that is not available for a permanent resident. Again, this is not, you're not, you do not have an extremely, you know, high amount of vacant housing or seasonal housing, but it does exist, and you do see that seasonal population for half the year. Homeownership rates have declined in Oro Valley. So from you know, two decades ago, extremely high homeownership rate of 84%, and that's down to 76.5%. That's still very, very high when you compare it to the region and state. So you do have a high percentage of owners versus renters, and part of that is just indicative of your housing stock too. These are household incomes. The median household income in Oro Valley currently is just over $92,500. That's an increase of 21% since over 2018. So household incomes have been increasing at a very healthy clip, and that helps in keeping up with inflation. But when we see that, when we put that side by side with what has happened in the housing market in the town, single-family home prices have increased 57% in the last 4 years. So congratulations if you purchased a home 5 or more years ago. You have a lot more equity in your home. Similar thing happened with condominiums and townhomes, an increase of 62%, now at a median price of over $350,000 versus $250,000 as early as recently as 2020. And mobile home prices have increased substantially too, although at a median price of $185,000, that's still a very, very affordable option for a homeowner, if you're to own your home. Although the manufactured home inventory in the town is extremely low. So that's on very low sales. So again, we look at what we want to see is, you know, what did median incomes do versus what home prices did, and then also what happened to inflation. So we did have record inflation over this period of time too, but it was 18% over the last 4 years. So when home prices increased by 57%, when you have 18% inflation, you are in a housing shortage. There are too many buyers seeking too little product, and so home prices skyrocket. Quickly on the new home market, in the very similar position, new homes in Oro Valley start at $450,000. The majority of new home sales over the last 12 months occurred in the $500,000 to $650,000 range. That was 59% of sales. An additional 30% of new home sales range from $650,000 to $1 million. So we are well into requiring a six-figure income as a household to be able to afford those homes, especially in this high interest rate market. You know, we're pushing 7-8% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. So the combination of housing price and interest rates are really degrading our affordability. We've posted here for comparison, because interest rates are out of our control. And we do expect them to be reduced. It could happen as early as the second half of 2024. Our current forecast is that they would stabilize probably around 5%, and we may not see that 3% for some time. So at a 5% rate, that does make a home of these prices more affordable, but we're still in the six-figure range, still needing a salary or household income of at least $105,000 to $140,000, and there's not very many of those households around. Oro Valley and Greater Phoenix and Greater Tucson, we are all, the entire country is in this same boat. The affordability issue is occurring nationwide. Greater Phoenix has felt that pain more acutely than some of the other areas. It is starting to impact economic development efforts. We're just not as affordable as we used to be. We don't have that. We don't have that advertisement anymore of come bring your $60,000 salary and you're a homeowner. That's just not the case. So this is just to say, again, you see here, affordability is now back to what we saw during the great bubble, the housing bubble of 2006. This chart, just real quickly, is if you're a family making the median income, what percentage of the housing stock in your region is affordable to you? So, again, we were touting that, 70-80% of the housing stock was affordable to a family that just made the median income. Now we're in the 30% range. So, it's become an issue. In terms of the rental market, the same issue occurred. It was pick your poison. Homeownership became much more expensive. Rents just in Oro Valley increased 31% over the last 2 years. You have a stabilized vacancy rate of 7%, which means you're basically fully occupied in apartments. That indicates a stable market. There may actually be some pent-up demand there. Your average rent by floor plan, starting at basically $40,000 for a studio apartment, but you only have 24 studio apartments. So you don't have very many of those. Most of your housing stock is in 1 and 2 bedrooms, and that is going to require a 1 bedroom at an average rent is a starting household income of $50,000, and for a 2 bedroom, it's $60,000. When you look at the kinds of occupations and the type of wages that are offered in the region, this is Pima County wages. There isn't any wage level data for the town specifically, but you're going to have very similar wages across the region. A hotel worker or a nursing assistant working in Oro Valley will probably find a similar wage, in Tucson or another community in the county. So this is. Just wanted to point that out, but basically, these are our essential workers. These are our protective services workers. These are our healthcare workers. These are our teachers. If on a single income as a household, most of these positions can't afford anything more than $1,200. So most of these folks, if they have not purchased a house previously, if they're not already in home ownership, and had to find housing in the area, they're looking at renting. Home ownership is well out of reach for every one of these occupations as a single income earner. The housing gap. So housing gap basically looks at how many of your residents are paying 30% or more of their income toward housing costs. That is the cutoff in terms of the definition of affordability for housing. You have nearly 2,600 homeowners, people that are in an ownership unit that are paying more than 30% of their income toward that mortgage and housing costs. And on the renter side, nearly 2,000 households. So 40% of the renters in Oro Valley are paying 30% or more of their income toward rent. And this creates a lot of issues. When you're spending all of your income toward your rent, this creates issues in terms of food security, in terms of healthcare, in terms of education, all sorts of things. It reduces the amount of disposable income you have to spend in the economy. And depending on how much you're spending toward rent, when you have a hiccup, when you run into an emergency, now you can't pay your rent, and now there's an eviction notice. So the homelessness is basically a leading indicator to a homelessness issue. If you've become so unaffordable that folks are spending this much of their income toward just paying their rent. So basically, the number of households that spend too much of their money toward rent is also the housing gap. You would have to supply this many units in the community at a price that is affordable to their income to be able to eliminate that housing gap. I'll kind of direct your eyes to that the table at the bottom. This largely affects lower, households at the lowest income ranges. And there really isn't a private market solution until you get to maybe a $50,000 salary or more. So you see here, there's about 400 or so households that make at least $50,000 that are still overpaying for their rent. There could be a private market solution, just meaning more supply, more apartments at a market rate, creating more competition in the community, just providing them a suitable unit at a market rate, meaning, back to what we showed you, a $1,200 or $1,300 payment would be affordable to them and would reduce their burden. When you get below $50,000, now you're talking about supporting a government-type program, a low-income housing tax credit type of product where both the federal government and the state of Arizona, have a competitive round and developers compete to create what looks like a market rate apartment community, but they're receiving tax credits such that they can lower the rent, subsidize the rent, and make it affordable to income qualified in households that could then pay that lower subsidized rent. And now they're less burdened. When you get into the very, very lowest income ranges, now you're talking about public housing. A government entity or a developer in partnership with a government building housing and subsidizing nearly all of the rent. That could be transitional housing. It could be all sorts of things, but basically you're in the realm of public housing. So I just want to point those things out as far as you have these buckets and these are the potential solutions if you were to try to address each of those buckets. I just wanted to point out too, part of the scope was to indicate there was previous surveys done in the town regarding preferences for additional retail, additional food services, additional entertainment, and things like that. This was a model that we created using the consumer expenditure survey, just to kind of show you how much a dense housing product can help in terms of achieving goals of supporting existing commercial or actually spurring new commercial development. So what we did here is side by side on, say, a 10-acre property, being able to supply 250 apartments. That's a pretty standard size for a market rate housing community. Making about $75,000 per household, they would create demand. Their disposable income and spending in the town would create demand for about 11,700 square feet of retail. So this is a few million dollars of new spending ability when those residents come into the town and live in those units, versus on the same plot of land, you could probably fit about 57 single family detached homes. And again, showing you those homes are now in the $600,000 range. So these are households making much, much more, say $130,000. So a much higher household income, but the density is really the driver of that. So 57 new households making $130,000 supports about 3,600 square feet of retail development. So the density overcomes lower household incomes in that case, and it really can drive. This is what retail developers are looking for: is this kind of development, these kind of rooftops, to be able to spur that new retail. And it also generates a lot of town revenue. So this is another model that we created. Again, looking at to the left of this table is the most dense type of a product. That would be like a four-story apartment building, and then it gets less and less dense as you go on. So a garden apartment is like a three-story apartment building. Some of those are the more traditional ones. We also include a build-to-rent product. You know, those are about 12, 13 units to the acre, and then we get down on down to the line of the single-family detached product. So again, you see here, acre per acre, this, when we can introduce some residential density, it really does drive a lot of new town revenue, a lot of school district property tax revenue, and things like that. So density does certainly help in terms of both town finance and in terms of retail support. So this is a quick bullet list of the recommendations that you'll find as you reach the end of our housing analysis in how we can try to address this gap in housing. From a private market side, the private market solution is density. So if you can support more rental products like a single family build to rent, townhomes, duplexes, 2 to 3 story apartments in strategic areas, and increasing supply is really what we're trying to find. Increasing supply in a type of residential product that can be affordable to folks making median and workforce wages. And that includes allowing secondary dwelling units on existing properties as well. We're seeing a huge trend across the country of allowing these secondary dwelling units. Unfortunately, a lot of them are converting to Airbnb, which does not help. That is not increasing the supply of available housing. But just again, the goal behind it is where can we add density? Where can we find, where can we add a smaller type of residential product? So if we can start to allow those secondary dwelling units on a single family lot, you know, that could lead to more supply. This was not part of our scope, but it kept coming up. We recommend that the town conduct a retail gap analysis. There is quite a bit of residential land in the town that's undeveloped. And without jumping to conclusions, if you have not seen a substantial amount of retail development and you are not looking at a substantial new population growth in your town boundaries, you may have an imbalance between retail land and what could be developed as residential. What we can tell you is the town supplied us with the number of parcels and the sizes of the parcels that are zoned multifamily. There are not very many. There was only about 5 parcels that we would consider as like feasible. A multifamily developer is looking for at least 10 acres of land to develop a community that's properly sized so that it pencils for them. And there's not that many that are currently zoned multifamily. And you have this commercial. If the retail gap analysis concludes that there is too much vacant retail land, that there's not going to be enough local population to support the eventual development of that land, a balancing of that land, allowing some of that commercially zoned land to go to residential. Those are also prime locations for a multifamily development. It's also usually, from the community's perspective, the most acceptable sites for multifamily as a buffer from commercial to multifamily to single family. And as you saw in those previous slides, that new residential development then can spur additional retail. So you start to balance out those land uses and you maximize your potential town revenue there. Manufactured homes. There's a stigma about manufactured homes. I would encourage you to see, go visit a new manufactured home community. Sometimes you cannot tell the difference between a manufactured home and one that was built as a single family detached house. This is from an ownership perspective, it's one solution to be able to provide an ownership type of product for someone that makes $50,000 to $75,000 a year, because otherwise they are completely priced out of the single family market. We understand that manufactured homes are only limited to just a small area of the town. So again, consider allowing more manufactured homes into the community. It will be an affordable ownership option. And these last two bullets, we always encourage that you seek more grant funding to support housing, and that could be things related to housing, like transportation projects that could spur additional infrastructure that makes housing development more feasible. And lastly, as we showed you in the gap analysis, the gap largely affects those that are making more modest incomes. And once you get down to, again, like I mentioned, less than $50,000 as a household income, there's really not a private market solution for, you can't just encourage a developer to come and develop in your town. They will not be able to build to the level of that makes their housing affordable to households that make a modest income. So that we would recommend that you support those subsidized housing programs, find those that are targeting workforce level wages, which means 40 to 100% of the area median income. This again typically is a multifamily product, but they've been a godsend for many households and individuals, especially again our essential workers, our healthcare workers, our teachers. All of these folks would qualify as a household they would be income qualified for these kinds of housing products. Again, when you look at them, these are very well built. They look like a market rate product. They typically are more expensive to build than a market rate apartment community because of all the they need to be LEED certified and all of the requirements that the government places on them. So they're very very nice communities. You can't tell that they are, a subsidized product. That it's, again, from a design standpoint, they're very well done. And so, yeah, those are our recommendations. This is the end of our slide presentation, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Court.
At this time, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to the public. I do have one blue card that we have here, and that is for Hal Birchman.
Good evening, Chair Inkin, Vice Chair Sturman, and members of the Commission. So I am Hal Bergsma. I'm a resident of Oro Valley, a former member of this Commission. And I'm really here this evening speaking as a volunteer for AARP. I volunteer for AARP mostly in terms of its age-friendly livable communities program, which is a very robust program. I also, as part of my volunteer activities for AARP, am involved with a group here in the Tucson area that's promoting affordable, accessible housing for older adults. And we've had an initiative going on in that direction for the last few years. The report that you receive the presentation on this evening is a very good report. Provides a lot of information, good recommendations. I can't disagree with anything that's on that screen there, but I think it misses one thing, and that's the need for accessible housing in Oro Valley. The report appropriately emphasizes two A words, affordability and attainability, in terms of housing needs in the community, but accessibility should be a third A word that's emphasized. Over a third of Oro Valley residents are over 65. That's about twice the average in Pima County and in Arizona. And that doesn't count the snowbirds who are part-time residents. Over half the occupants of owner-occupied houses in Oro Valley are over 65. As people age, they're more subject to temporary or permanent disabilities, limiting their ability to access and move around within a house. And I can speak to that personally, since I had to use a walker for a few weeks this summer after a surgery. Recently, AARP contracted with the R.L. Mace Universal Design Institute to do a report on inclusive home design ordinances in Pima County and the city of Tucson. These ordinances, which were adopted in 2002 and 2007, were some of the first in the country to require single-family residences, and I believe duplexes and triplexes as well, to allow for visits by people with disabilities, requiring things like at least one no-step entrance, doors and hallways wide enough to navigate through, a bathroom on the first floor, big enough to get into a wheelchair and close the door. And if you let me proceed, I just have another minute or so to go. Under these ordinances, thousands of houses have been built in Tucson and unincorporated Pima County. However, these ordinances do not apply to the suburban communities in Pima County, such as Oro Valley. I'm recommending that as Oro Valley moves ahead with preparing the housing element of its general plan, consideration should be given to adopting housing accessibility regulations. And I will send the Universal Design Institute report to staff so they can gain further understanding of this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Birchman. Ms. Sacona, do we have any additional blue cards?
No.
I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. All right. Actually, I think I'll go ahead and start it off. I do have a few questions for Mr. Court. It's pertaining to the report. I'm looking on page 5, and one of the it's underneath the data finding of your report. I don't know if you have it in front of you there, but one of your questions that you have on there is the demand for housing through 2040 totals approximately 3,100 units. I was wondering, how do you get to that number when the influx of people coming to Arizona from colder states and even California is intensely increasing, more so than it has in the last 10 years? I want to know how you got your number from going so up to 2040.
Thank you, Chair. That is just a function of the current Arizona state demographer has population forecast for the town of Oro Valley. And so we're just converting their forecast, their current forecast, into a housing demand unit. So it's a, you know, that's not something that's written in stone. You know, if Oro Valley were, it's probably also based on, you know, your historical population growth, and then how much growth you have left before build out. Those are probably some of the pieces of that forecast. But yeah, we're relying on the state of Arizona's official forecast for town of Oro Valley and converting that to a housing unit forecast.
Okay. I have one additional follow-up question. I actually had a chance to print out your packet and actually read every line and every page. One of the things that I looked at and I didn't see in your report is you reached out to businesses, you reached out to homeowners, I think you reached out to apartment communities, but did you reach out to any of the developers who are looking to develop or have developed, or any of the property management companies who currently manage properties in Oro Valley, and any of the Saba or any of the current single family developers? I didn't see anything pertaining to any of that information in your report, and I read it more than once in certain areas.
Yeah, no, that type of outreach is not included in the scope of what we were requested to look at. So we were basically limited to research of available data sources. We did not get any anecdotal feedback from developers. What data we did have was the R.O. Brown data gave us new home sales, the type of product that's being developed, and things like that. We looked at historical permits by type, either single family or apartment, and then we looked at historical trends in apartment rent and vacancy. So there's no scope to pull the developability or the perception of development in the town. So, but I think that would be an excellent thing to pursue.
One follow up.
Go ahead. Interrupt, Chair. If I may, I just wanted to punctuate that really the mission, the charge that Pollack and Company really took up well was to stay focused on the data production. So, I wanted to speak a little bit about how that data is going to get used. So that data you have some recommendations and options in front of you on the screen. It really is a discussion point. It is a start for the path forward in the general plan to have this conversation with residents with facts at hand, to have the conversation with developers, the SABAs, the stakeholders, everyone that does business here as well as lives here, to have a foundation of data to move from. I think most of all of you understand and have felt that many sayings or thoughts about housing are anecdotal. They're not grounded in fact. You know, I've personally witnessed that at multiple neighborhood meetings about, you know, what type of people move into apartments, et cetera, et cetera. The aim here was to really create a foundation of data to start that conversation and consistently refer back to the data. So the folks that you were mentioning, they will be contacted and they'll be part of the process. We're just not anywhere near there yet. This is the foundation.
Great, thank you. Yeah. I think what I was trying to get at was I think if we reach out to the developers and or the home builders, we could find out where their stop or the reasons why they're not building as many homes in Oro Valley, and or is the land too much, too expensive? That's why the prices are too high. I think a good start is there, or is there a reason why, or is there something that's just holding them back from building here? Is it a code or compliance that would help with the information moving forward for town and council to decide on when they move forward, when it gets to that point, and also the rest of the residents?
No, I'm in complete agreement.
But I think that, that information is very important to know why they're not building here, or rather build somewhere else, or is there, I know some of the land may be an issue, the building in certain locations in Oro Valley. I know we're getting to the end of our stretch where we can build apartments and or townhouses or viable land. So where's the, what is the reason why they're not driving that force to move forward now? So with that said, I'll go ahead and open up to Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. So a couple of questions for you regarding the employee survey that you did. You said you surveyed like 136 or something like that. How many employees were approached total and who were not eligible because they did live in Oro Valley?
I'll have Kathy come up and answer that. But
could you please come up to the...
Yeah, this the invitation to complete those was posted by the town staff, so it was open to whoever saw the invitation or read about the invitation. There was from our perspective, we just processed the data. The invitations were issued by the town, so we can't speak to who they invited or how people might have seen it in such a way, but I know the publicity was extensive. So it might be something that Malini can better answer.
Thank you, Malini.
So Commissioner Clark, the survey for businesses and employees was promoted through the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce, through our own Economic Development Department. They also reached out to business, some of our major employers, to spread the word. As part of that survey, one of the first questions and awareness that people answered was if they worked here or if they lived here, then they were encouraged to go take the resident survey. So it was self-selected for both the online surveys.
Thank you. Then my other question, while I was reading this survey, the biggest piece of information that was missing, we have all kinds of data, Oro Valley compared to the state, compared to Pima County, but in regards to affordability and home prices, there's nothing that compares it to Pima County and the state. And it almost seems disingenuous to me because it reads like, well, everything in Oro Valley is going up. Well, that's true everywhere. Yep. And so to have the percentage of what the home prices have gone up in Pima County versus the state versus Oro Valley, it's completely missing from this report. And it's something that we certainly need to have added because it just seems to point the finger to Oro Valley that we are just way too expensive. But really, that's the case everywhere.
We can provide that data if you'd like. Again, back to the scope is to just look at Town of Oro Valley and what is affordable. So what we're doing is we're comparing not what are the home prices in Oro Valley versus Marana or versus Pima County or Tucson. We're just looking at is Oro Valley affordable to its residents, to its workers, and things like that. So our comparison is mainly to look at salaries and the housing cost. And then to provide trends, just like Bayer said, that this is a baseline of data to then use for your strategy. So the baseline is what has happened historically in terms of trends. There is no language in there saying that Oro Valley is too expensive. It is just showing you how much money you need to make to be able to afford either a single family home, a town home, or to rent an apartment here. It should not be interpreted as a condemnation on Oro Valley as being too expensive. It is just providing data to you as to what has happened to home prices and rent in the community.
Right. I understand that, but one of your survey questions to the statistically valid survey was, do you think prices in Oro Valley are too high? And so naturally, yes, everybody's going to think that across the country, whether you live in Tucson, you live here, you live somewhere else. And so it just, as far as the data is concerned, yes, everybody's going to think that, but it would be really good to have that data to show that, well, home prices are going up everywhere. So it just makes it feel like this was a whole advertisement for we need more apartments. And clearly the respondents don't want apartments. They really don't want manufactured homes. And so that recommendation is a little bit out of bounds for me for what we got in our survey.
Yeah, and that was an interesting response that we saw, because there were responses that respondents did feel that home prices are too high in Oro Valley, and they also felt like housing costs was a concern. But then what they wanted was more single family homes. That will never solve the affordability issue. So that's why we're taking the survey data or the survey responses as part of the consideration, and then kind of using data to say whether we can verify that or whether it doesn't jive. So it is crystal clear that the residents of Oro Valley overwhelmingly favor single family homes, but that will never solve the affordability issue. So those are two issues that are going to be in conflict with each other.
Thank you.
Commissioner Nichols.
Thank you, Chair Harrington, and thank you for your presentation tonight. It was very good. My question is for staff, Mr. Vella. So one of the recommendations here is to consider, I guess it's not said, but essentially it's zoning, right? Whether we would consider changing some commercial zoning to high density residential. So far, my experience has been those things come to us piecemeal, right? A developer wants to change zoning, and that's how it comes to us. But as part of the general plan, would we be looking at this globally and saying, hey, perhaps we should look at where high-density housing would make sense and doing that proactively rather than waiting for a developer or someone to propose that? I'm just not sure. How does that work?
If I may, Chair, Member Nichols, any planner worth their salt is going to pitch the idea of doing it comprehensively and agree with you strongly. It's certainly a lot more challenging, I think, for everyone involved to do it in a piecemeal basis. And I appreciate, and these are the recommendation of the consultants, not staff, and I appreciate part of that recommendation is to conduct a retail gap analysis so we can confirm conclusively and put to rest this question that's been very pervasive over the last 10 years, do we have too much commercial? And anecdotally, staff's assertion has been yes. It's been vacant for a very long time. And the numbers that we see in terms of units in the immediate area, customers, compared to other intersections such as McGee and Oracle that have a more favorable climate. We have quite a few intersections in Ore Valley, Rancho Vistoso area, and whatnot, where it doesn't appear we're going to catch up in terms of creating the metrics to make sure all of these vacant pads are filled eventually. So pardon the long-winded answer, but you know, we feel, and I'm aware economic development staff are already in working on getting requests for proposals from consultants to do a retail gap analysis so we can answer that question conclusively. So, but certainly as part of any general plan effort, we look at the entire and offer the opportunity for the community to look at the entire map, entire land mass, and dive into questions like this.
Thank you, Chair Harrington, Mr. Vella. So would that be part of the general plan, that staff would then use that to propose from the staff zoning changes?
So it's, Commissioner Nichols, it's an opportunity. And the reason I keep saying opportunity is that, you know, when this question was broached during the last general plan process, staff certainly make suggestions, but we also had teams and groups, committees working on these very issues. And the prevailing sense back then of the residents working on the plan was that it was such a controversial issue. There was concern that it would harm the effort to have the general plan pass. And they also felt that the advantage, the flip side of doing it on a case-by-case basis, is that through the neighborhood meeting process, there's more intensive discussion. The people next door to each site really have a true chance to jump into the conversation. So it was deferred. There was, and you'll see right now in the general plan, language that says we prefer that this be worked out with the immediate neighbors at each intersection where this is an issue, rather than a group of folks making decisions for those residents. So my answer is a bit evasive, that we want that decision to come from the committee, the residents that are working on the general plan. Certainly, as a planner, a professional planner, we would like to see planning in advance rather than one-off. But it's certainly a good point. I'll just let it lie there.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I may add one other thing. In the state of Arizona, we do have a regulatory scheme that would cause problems if we impose down zoning, reducing the value of land. And that could create an issue. That's why we let the landowners come to us with that. That could be very expensive, taking somebody's commercial project that may be worth X and say, oh, now you have to do this other project that may be worth a lot less. Used to be Prop 207. Now it's basically a statute, ARS 12-1134.
Thank you for that guidance. Commissioner Slinsky.
Yes, thank you. I, too, noticed the recommendations where high density solves one of the affordability issues, and it also helps with the support of the retail community and also helps with the taxes. And yet we saw in the beginning of this presentation where people want more single family. So that's a big hurdle to get over. Putting that aside, what I need here is some context. None of this tells us how many, you've got numbers of, we build this many, we get this. We build that many, we get that, either single family or multifamily. But what it doesn't talk about is how much more can we build? What's the lever we have? I've seen presentations here before, not tonight, but it said we have 7% of the zoned residential area already out and sold. I think it was 6% is still available. So it's basically 13% of the community can be put into residential. What numbers of homes or multifamily units does that represent? Because that tells us what we're talking with here. We may be dealing with a 500, 600, 700 homes, and that's not going to have any much of an impact
on the numbers presented here. I mean, these numbers look large. We've got to build thousands of multifamily or even residential, single family, in order to have an impact on a lot of the things presented. So I think, again, sometimes it comes up in the discussions I have, we need context. We have no context here. It's a good exercise, instinctively and directionally. I think it's correct. But I don't know what it tells us. It doesn't tell us what to do and which one of these would be viable.
Yeah, well, I think that's an excellent next step. I think planning staff does have that kind of data available as far as remaining vacant parcels and what their zoning are. And I think what we were alluding to is, well, at least in the analysis that I saw, there appeared to be about five marketable multifamily parcels available within the town that are vacant. I don't have the acreages next to them, but we could convert that to number of units. After that is kind of back to this issue of, well, where else can you develop? Is there excess vacant commercial that could be rezoned to multifamily? That is the land use balance that we're kind of talking about. But that would be an excellent next step of how much can you feasibly build left in the town.
But you didn't gloss over. You left out the fact how many residential units can be built that are single family on that zoning that currently exists.
Yeah.
You said only five parcels can be multifamily.
Yes, and there are several single family parcels.
How many units is that, and how does that translate into the sum of the conclusions?
So, Commissioner Zielinski, we've done that analysis. Every year we come to you guys with the vacant land analysis, and we did provide that to Mr. Court, so I do believe it is in the study, but there's 1,471 single family units left in the town to be built based on existing zoning, so that's without any annexations or rezonings. There's 1,628 multifamily units. That's not just apartments, though. That's townhomes, anything attached. So in total, we have a little over 3,100 units left based on existing zoning. We also took in topography into that factor, so it's not just looking at how much density is allowed on those parcels. To Mr. Court's response, several of those high-density residential parcels will not reach the yield that high-density residential could give because of topography, and that also matches the population projections from the Arizona Demographer's Office.
Okay, so it would be good to take those numbers, put them on a chart or a graph next to his numbers about what we need in order to get the affordability that we want. Because I don't think the numbers are there. I don't think much we do is going to move this lever.
All right. Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. Yes, I just have a few questions. First of all, the survey responses on the survey. 53% of your phone responses were agreed that it's not a lack of financial attainable housing. Also, 62% said that online, the ones that did their survey online, said they didn't feel like, you know, there was a need. So am I correct on that?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Okay.
Could you come to the microphone, please, so we can all hear? Sorry.
Okay, on your survey responses?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On your telephone, 53% said that they didn't feel like it was necessary to, that there was not a lack of financial attainable housing.
Where are you saying that? Where are you showing that?
Was it in the precinct?
I was just taking what you said, the ones that said we need it, that there was some problems with being able to, versus what it is now. I'm just saying what was on the other end of it.
Sorry, we're just trying to make sure we're talking apples to apples here.
If you keep going
know there was the lack of financial attainable housing. Keep going. One more. Right here. So I think she's saying on the phone survey, 37% agreed, strongly agreed, but how many? That would mean 60-something didn't.
If 47%.
I was just counting the people that said they don't think.
Okay, so if 47% agree that there's a lack of financially attainable housing, then you're saying 53%, the reverse of that, are disagreeing with
yes,
that
ma'am.
Statement.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that.
Okay, okay. Uh-huh. Gotcha. All right.
All right. And so anyway, and the 62% of the online agreed as well that everything was fine, that there was no lack of financial attainable housing. So I'm just saying what I'm saying is the majority of the people that were surveyed said there was no need for any of this.
And they were either you were in the neutral, this is a 1 to 5 scale. So we'd need to go to the report to see how many disagreed. There could be a percentage that just were neutral. They didn't agree or disagree that it was a, because it's a 1 to 5 scale, 4 and 5 are the agreement, and then 1 and 2 is the disagreement, then 3 is kind of the, they didn't have a strong opinion one way or the other. And so it will be in the report. I don't have that up here on the screen, but that's something that we can certainly give to you so we can show what the percent disagree is with those as well.
I just really want to know what our residents think. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the whole purpose for the survey.
Right, and that it is in the full report. We just had limited time here to show all of the detail.
Okay, and also, is there an influx amount of residents that are leaving because they can't afford the housing? Leaving like they live here now and they're leaving to go somewhere else? Do you know any? Did you get any of that during your survey?
We asked a question. I just have to, it was something along that line. Would you consider leaving? It wasn't a high percentage, but I can dig through it. And just to your previous point, the percent who disagree is 28%. It's not the 53%. So there is a 25% people who gave that 3 rating in the middle, just saying, I don't have an opinion on it. Those who disagreed with it or don't believe that there's a financial problem financially, that was 28%. And that can be found, that can be found on page 23 in the report. But so if you, but that number, that detail is here for you.
I appreciate that. That explains it.
And then I'll see if you have something
else.
And
also on these 4-story apartments, we just need to take into consideration the beauty that is here in Nora Valley. And 4-story can possibly restrict the views. And so I just, you know, maybe think of other options other than that.
All right. Any additional questions, Commissioner Posey? Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Court, for your presentation and your colleague. I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Catherine.
I don't have a question or a challenge to the data that you've presented, but I do have a comment or a position statement, if I may. It's a reminder to me of our charge as members of this commission to be a steward of the current general plan in the decisions that I make regarding the community. I really wish there were more members of the community present tonight to hear your presentation. And that's why I'll be a zealous advocate for the community participation and development of the next general plan, Ms. Sims. We get a lot of community participation in neighborhood meetings when it comes to new requests for development. So authentic feedback from the community is essential to answer those questions that we answered earlier tonight. Do we want to make housing for essential workers more affordable and accessible and help potentially drive economic development in Oro Valley? Do we want to preserve the views and perhaps anecdotally, the property values of current residents. This is a balance we as a commission are charged with in our recommendations to town council, and one that I take very seriously. So thank you, Mr. Court and Catherine and Ms. Sims and staff for your efforts in helping to forge our future in Oro Valley. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Allred. Vice Chair Sternman.
Thank you, Chair Harrington. Let's go back to the recommendation list that you had up there for a while. You know, one of the things that is my background is when I retired, I came from Chicago. And one of the things that transpired for us in Chicago was we had suburbs. Why we had suburbs is the various factions of, or groups of labor pool. So what did we do is that we built transportation structure to bring them in. I myself, it was a 45-minute ride one way. I did that for 13 years. And the issue is that I'm bringing out is this data is very important, and it reveals a great deal of what our breadth and depth is. But at the same time, you need to think about transferring, because no matter what you do in terms of housing development in Oro Valley, you're always going to have families that were born and raised in certain sections of Tucson. So make it easy for them to come in to have employment here. The other factor is I really find it very interesting to find grant funding support housing. Well, who is going to handle support housing? Is it going to be the builders, grant them money to build affordable housing? And the other factor about affordable housing, and it's proven out the case, in Chicago, that's been done for 50 years. And what it ends up is that we have a situation where we have to tear down whole structures of multi-story buildings that were condemned because they weren't maintained. So I'm really concerned is that when you start talking about affordable housing, who is going to manage that? And how is it going to be allocated, and to who, and who is going to occupy it? But the supporting infrastructure, I think, is a key factor that needs to be looked into. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
I located the answer to your question about people leaving. It was 11. It was 10% indicated that they were very or nearly certain to leave Oro Valley due to costs of housing. Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. I think I have another question. I'm looking at here page 7, and we're talking acreage and land. I want to clarify. It says the town estimates roughly 265 acres of commercial zone land remains. Where do we get that number from?
So, Chair Harrington, that's part of our vacant land analysis that we do each year. So that's looking at the parcels that are left that have either our C1, C2, or actually that's it, zoning and the PAD equivalents.
And that's as of when? Is that last year or currently?
That is a few months old, so it's pretty current.
Okay, thank you for that. I have an additional follow-up question. Of course, we're talking about grants and, of course, affordability of homes and tax credits. And, of course, I know that Oro Valley is we're pretty close to 50,000 residents, so we don't qualify USDA. There's not many lenders for affordable housing that is currently out there. And of course, we talked about tax credit. It's also in here as well. And of course, if you're not familiar with tax credit is very, very competitive. If you're not familiar with that field, and I have a little bit of knowledge with that,
tax credit is very, very competitive, and most tax credit is approved probably once a year, and majority of those tax credit properties go to the Metro Phoenix area. It usually doesn't go out to anywhere else except for special projects or locations throughout the state. So applying for tax credit is very, very competitive and is very, very hard to get. You have to have a lot of leverage in order to leverage funds to build those tax credit properties. And, of course, there's management companies that manage those properties. But it is very, very hard to get tax credit. Of course, that would help with getting more affordable housing in Oro Valley, but it's extremely hard. It's years working towards getting that leverage. Could you speak on that? Because it's in your report.
Yes. Yes, it is indeed. Well, I'll break those out. There's what are called 9% tax credits. Those are the most popular. And indeed, the Arizona Department of Housing receives a bucket of money. there's also new state tax credit monies that are being paired with that to help increase the volume of what can be built. But yes, there's a competitive round. It occurs typically in March or April. I don't know how many applications they get, but typically, you know, you'll see anywhere from 15 to 20 projects are approved or receive the tax credits based on just your reading population. Yeah, Metro Phoenix does receive a large amount of those. There are tribal set-asides. There are also rural set-asides. it is not unusual. I mean, so yes, there. Just because someone wants to build a tax credit project in Oro Valley will not necessarily translate in that same year getting their tax credit allocation. And some projects, they do apply for multiple years. Applying multiple years does increase your chance of getting an award based on the points that are awarded. But we do see it, you know, we just saw one in... the name escapes me now, but there are, you know, there is a process, and there's a discussion on how to distribute those tax credit projects. I would say that if Oro Valley does not have any tax credit projects, that probably is a consideration that could increase the chance of award. But yes, it is still a chance. There's also 4% tax credits, and those are typically targeted toward a higher household income. So someone making above 60% of AMI, all the way up to maybe 100 or 120% of AMI. Those are bond products. There are developers in the state of Arizona that are seeking those projects. Those are just on a case-by-case basis. If there's money in the housing trust fund to be able to award those, typically Arizona does not allocate all the way up to what their bond capacity is. So it's more that making those more feasible. That could mean, you know, if the town were to invest, like donating land or making some sort of investment, reducing permit fees or something like that, where you made the project more feasible. So there's a whole host of opportunities, but yes, the 9% is a very competitive round, and you're not guaranteed to be able to get it. That's not a reason to not pursue that option, because these are not options that the town is pursuing. These are developer led. So the developer is the one doing the due diligence, applying and investing in that application process. The town could be a partner by writing a letter of support or providing financial support. And then you get into just public-private partnerships. Like City of Sedona has done this. They've literally just given a developer $4 million toward their construction costs with the agreement, with the deed. I don't know if it's a deed restriction or what, but they are limiting their rents to be affordable to 100% AMI of that community. So there are lots of options available, and depending on if you want federal investment, state investment, or if you're going to invest locally.
One more follow-up. I'm not sure if you're aware what happens after 15 or 20 years with the tax credit property. Those tax credits
convert to market rate, yes.
Correct, yes. So they lose their tax credit status. So, of course,
we'd have to look at what happened to that property at that point in time, because usually they're sold or converted.
Yes, typically they convert. And again, it depends on, like, there were some mentions of upkeep of property. I mean, again, I know there is some stigma, and there are also many examples of public housing that has become dilapidated. You can find examples locally of housing that was built in the 1950s, you know, row housing, single family row housing. These are managed by the cities or the county. They're well maintained, but they are very old. The infrastructure is very old. And what is happening now is, as the life cycle completes, those are being demolished. Sometimes they're redeveloped into what looks like a more modern apartment community, a two or three story apartment community. I would say again, but if you see a tax credit project, you cannot tell the difference between a market rate, unless it's a luxury product. You cannot tell the difference from the outside who those residents are and how much money they make. They're very well designed and developed. Landscaping and community amenities, they are built out to the nines usually. So it does, you are also, you know, the management company is absolutely critical. Oftentimes when those tax credits do expire, you now do have a property that is 15 to 20 years old. So that naturally becomes a B or C product. So those typically do have more modest rents. And that's, again, that's back to like the private market solution. Your older apartment units are less costly. They're more modest in rents. And that does provide kind of a natural inventory of more affordable units. And that's just, you know, that's just the realities of the life cycle of a real estate product.
Okay. We'll go ahead and go to Commissioner Clark.
Just one quick question, going back to that 10% of people who are imminently going to move out of Oro Valley, do we know if those were homeowners or renters?
That one I would have. Can you please come up to the podium?
Thank you.
That one I would have to dig into the cross tabulations, but I can certainly provide that to the staff.
Thank you very much.
All right, we have Commissioner Posey.
I'm sorry, I have to call you back. But on the, also, I wanted to know on that 10%, is that documented or was that just offhand?
No, that is the survey result that is in the report.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I have one more question, and it's about the economics. I'm looking on page 20 here of your report, and we're talking about single family versus apartments. Of course, looking at the numbers, obviously, it looks like the apartments would bring more regional spending and more vitality than the single family. How do you get to those numbers comparatively? Is it because people in a single family are not spending as much on a regular basis versus apartments?
No, people in single family are per household are spending more, but we're doing the comparison on an acreage basis. So you can fit 250 apartments on the same piece of land that you can only fit 57 single family homes. So we're actually showing nearly double the household income in those single family homes. So on a per household basis, they do spend more money in the economy, but they're not spending substantially more in the economy. As your income increases, you spend only up to kind of a ceiling of groceries or household goods or things like that. When your income increases, your spending tends to be distributed to savings, investment, education, travel, which are not able to be captured by local brick and mortar retail establishments. So basically what I'm saying is a household making $60,000 a year is spending less in the economy as a household making $130,000, but not half as much as a household making $130,000. So it increases somewhat, but not by double. It's not like a 1-to-1 to income. And so then when you add in the density that we're basically adding 4.5 times the number of households on that same piece of land, those households combined are spending much more in the economy.
So you're doing it per door per acre versus?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I wanted
to
confirm.
Yeah, we're showing, we're trying to show both the sensitivity of both. We're showing that, yes, indeed, a household making more spends more, but if there are more units on that piece of land, that overcomes the more modest household income that's out there spending.
Thank you for that answer. Any other questions from any of the commissioners? Hearing none, I would like to thank you very much for your information and your replies.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. All right. Do we have a planning update from staff?
Yes, sir. It's quite similar to our last meeting, so I will scoot through this pretty quickly. So we have a neighborhood meeting planned Thursday, November 9th, and that's for proposed 205 or so rental units at the northwest corner of Tangerine and First Avenue, and also includes the parcel just north of the Ranch Vistosa's Safeway. That will be the third neighborhood meeting for that project, and we anticipate that coming to Planning and Zoning Commission for public hearing in December at your next meeting. Town Council is meeting next week to consider changes to the Oro Valley Marketplace that you reviewed not too long ago, and also to consider a general plan amendment and rezoning request. If you remember that parcel over on Moore Loop Road, just over toward the Big Wash near Valley Vista Subdivision. So also toward that same week, the 16th, the day after the council meeting, there will be another neighborhood meeting for a 31-lot proposed subdivision rezoning just down the street, La Cañada and Moore, right as you get to the traffic circle there. So that's the southwest intersection of Moore Road and La Cañada. And then finally, we have a lot going on this month. There's a lot going on. November 20th, there's an 18-lot residential subdivision proposed essentially back behind the Nokomis Sky senior care facility. It's also just east of Silverhawk Subdivision. So as you're driving down Naranja and you hit First, if you were to keep going through Silverhawk and across the Wash, it's a parcel back up in there. That was zoned for residential when it was back in the county, way back in the day. So that's coming up on the 20th. We look forward to hopefully a slower December. Thank you, Chair. That concludes the staff report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Phillip. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Can I have a second?
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much. Have a great night.